How many businesses in Wisconsin and across the country say they can't find enough workers to fill open jobs? In a June survey from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, 86% of businesses surveyed said that they were struggling to hire workers. That's meant many of them are raising pay and adding hiring incentives. Take, for example, the Pleasant Prairie packaging giant Uline. They've increased their year-end bonus for employees who are on board by the end of this month to $8,000. That's up $2,000 since just under a year ago. We're taking a look at the labor supply in Wisconsin and how it's impacting workers and employers in the state, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you looking to hire people? How's it going? Having trouble finding people to do the job? Are you getting into the workforce, back into the workforce? Are you holding out for one reason or another? Are you looking to switch from one type of career to another? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. Steve Deller is a regional economist at UW-Madison. Steve, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
How hard is it for businesses in Wisconsin to find workers lately?
I think that we're returning to pre-pandemic, where a lot of businesses were struggling with finding quality workers. I think that as we're trying to get back from the pandemic, I think those labor shortages that we were experiencing before the pandemic are just kind of, we've got a bit of a spotlight on them right now because there's some other complicating things there that are making a tight labor market even tighter.
Yeah, what are those complicating factors?
I think a lot of it is that some folks don't feel safe going back to work. There's still that kind of fear of the safety, particularly now that we're going into this fourth wave of COVID now. Not so much in Wisconsin, but in the southern states, you're seeing this fourth wave spike up a lot. That's making a lot of folks really nervous. And some people are hesitant, particularly for the businesses that are really experiencing this shortage, tend to be kind of lower paying jobs, jobs with minimal skill requirements. Those are the types of jobs that, people are just really hesitant to go back to.
Some employers, including many in that Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce survey, point toward this enhanced unemployment benefit for workers scheduled to expire early next month. Is that a factor in keeping people on the sidelines if they're already unemployed, getting that little bit extra money?
I think for a very small percentage, that's probably true, that they are kind of saying, let's just sit and wait. You start adding in things like exposure to the virus, things like childcare, access to childcare, and then that little bit of additional money, you might see a small percentage that are still kind of in a wait and see mode. I think when that additional benefit goes away, you'll see a marginal increase in the labor force participation rate, but not enough of an increase to really alleviate the shortages that we have now.
As you mentioned, this isn't just a pandemic story. What fundamentals are out there that's creating, in some ways, a worker shortage here in the state?
Two things, I think. One is we simply have more jobs than we have people to fill those jobs. Wisconsin has historically had a very high labor force participation rate. So it's not that we have a lot of people sitting on the sidelines. With the pandemic right now, we do have some people sitting on the sidelines for a variety of reasons. But we have, in essence, we have more jobs than we have people to fill those jobs. And when you start to get into lower paying type of jobs, that problem is exacerbated. So what we have really is not a labor force participation rate problem, is that we just simply don't have enough people moving into the state to take these jobs.
Well, we've got some new census numbers out, Steve. The state's population grew, not like gangbusters. Some parts grew, others went down. When you see these numbers, are we seeing enough people coming into the state and few enough leaving the state, I guess, to help solve that problem demographically?
No, I think we're not. We're not seeing enough people moving into the state. There's been a fair amount of work on this notion of the brain drain of that, students that are going to the UW, for example, they're all flooding the state. That's not necessarily true. Where we're experiencing a brain disconnect is people with higher education or people with some college moving into the state. We're not getting people moving into the state as we would hope.
Talking to Steve Dollar, regional economist at UW-Madison, looking at the labor supply in the state, concerns about a worker shortage in many businesses. You can join in with your thoughts, questions, maybe your personal experience at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Penelope is with us in Dane County. Penelope, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to tell us about, Penelope?
Well, so I understand that, you know, on the one hand, Dane County's population has increased by 15%. I also understand that the minimum wage for the county, for the state, is not up to snuff. I mean, what's up, Dane County? I work for a nonprofit here in Dane County, and they can't raise their entry-level hourly rate higher than $12. And how is that a livable wage here in Dane County when the average cost of a house is $400,000? So let's see, how many people do you have live in that house in order to be able to afford it?
Penelope,
maybe eight?
Penelope, thanks a lot for the call. Steve, what are we seeing with wages given this shortage of labor supply?
Well, you've got the public sector and the private sector, and the private sector has greater flexibility in how they can raise wages and whatnot. In the public sector, it's a little bit more difficult because there are rules and regulations that have to be adjusted. In terms of the nonprofits, a lot of times they would, and this is true for a lot of businesses, they would like to increase their wages. They simply cannot increase their wages. Now, one of the things that's going to shake out, I think, is that a lot of marginal businesses that really can't afford to pay a little bit more, they're going to kind of be pushed to the side over the long term. They're either going to have to adapt to having fewer workers, which means maybe automation, or they're going to have to find a different way of conducting business, or they may simply decide that this business is no longer viable. We did through the pandemic, we lost a lot of those businesses. They're gone. They're not coming back. But this labor shortage and the increase in wages may push a few more of those out the door. Now, the question is that, we're losing jobs to pay $10 an hour, $11 an hour. Is that really a bad thing?
Penelope, thanks for the call. Penelope also brings up a mismatch. And Dane County, certainly there are other places in the state you could point to where the wages are what they are, $12 an hour at her work, and cost of living, housing costs are really high, historically high in a lot of places in the state. How big a problem is that? If you want to bring in new workers, they got to have a place to live.
That is one of the issues. When I work around Wisconsin communities, there's a couple of issues that they're just uniformly communities are struggling with: broadband, labor shortages, and housing. And housing is either too expensive for the types of jobs that are in the community, or it's substandard housing. People don't want to live there. So what we're finding, and this is some work that a colleague of mine, Matt Kiris, has been doing, is looking at what's called stretch commuting. People that commute more than 50 miles one way to go to work. And over the last 15, 16, 17 years, that number has just kind of exploded. And I think my hypothesis is, we haven't done the research yet, but I think a big factor in what's driving that is relative housing costs. So I may have a job in, say, an urban center like, say, a Madison, but I can't afford to live in Madison. So what I'll do is I will now start to decide to commute. The other thing that's going to complicate this, and this is we're having a really hard time getting a handle on this, is telecommuting. The pandemic proved that a lot of occupations can be undertaken by telecommuting. Are we going to see kind of this movement out into more rural communities, smaller communities, to take advantage of a different lifestyle, lower housing costs, and telecommute? That's still playing itself out, and we don't really know exactly how that's going to play out.
Penelope, thanks for that call. We'll go to Sarah now in Minocqua. Sarah, hi.
Hi. I just wonder,
I think that there are kind of two groups of people. There are certainly a lot of people who don't have a choice. They have to go out and work. They have absolutely no cushion, financial cushion, and so they are going to work no matter what. And then there are a group of people like myself who maybe don't have to work, have a financial cushion. I'm not on any public assistance, but, you know, I've always been underemployed, and I feel like now would be a perfect time for me to go out and level up and pretty much ask for my salary. But I think that the first group of people, the people who have to, who are going to work no matter what, a lot of those people are the people who are not getting vaccinated. And so I have a disincentive to go and work for a place where my coworkers are going to be unvaccinated. I'm not going to jeopardize my safety for that, even though I am vaccinated. Now, I know people that are desperately looking to hire people, and they have a fleet of workers who refuse to get vaccinated, and they call the shots. I mean, they don't have to show up for work. They're able to get paid whatever, you know, they ask for. They pretty much know they've got the employer over a barrel, and they're not able to attract people who are vaccinated into that situation.
Interesting. Sarah, what do you think, Steve, of the scenario Sarah's painting there?
I think that's true. And I think that this is why there's a hesitation for folks that are, you know, that don't have to work. That first group that Sarah was talking about is, I don't have a choice. I have to go to work. That could be a single parent. It could be a single person. It could be, you know, a variety of situations where they don't have a choice. They have to work. But with the labor market the way it is right now, is that if their employer, for example, is not mandating vaccination and they don't feel safe, now's the time to shift careers and shift employment. And I think that this is where a lot of folks are starting to think about, is this the kind of work that I want to continue to do? Now, if I'm going to shift, now is the time to do that. I also think we're going to start to see a lot more firms mandating vaccination, simply because of what Sarah mentioned, is that some people simply will not work in an environment where they don't feel safe. And the current fourth wave is exacerbating that. So if we had this conversation 2 weeks ago before the fourth wave hit, we'd be talking one way, but it's such a dynamic situation that it's really kind of hard to say, you know, this is exactly what's happening because the condition keeps changing.
We're picking up our discussion about concerns about worker shortages in Wisconsin and how it's impacting different industries, businesses, and employees and employers in Wisconsin. Steve Deller stays with us from UW-Madison. Let's go back to your calls now. Jeff is with us in Waukesha. Jeff, hi.
Hello, Jeff. Thanks for letting me on. The only thing I wanted to mention was how employers treat their employees. I was reading the Reader's Digest that Amazon drivers don't even have enough time to go to the bathroom and even get a lunch break. I mean, things like that. Creating an environment that is makes the employee, their day go easier for them, would go a long way along with the wages, but I think that's another aspect that we never talk about.
Interesting point, Jeff. Thanks for bringing that up, Steve. Not necessarily just about wages, but the working conditions that Jeff's thinking about there.
I think Jeff's point is right on target. There are a lot of businesses that are going to continue to have labor shortage issues because nobody wants to work for them. Businesses that treat their employees as their most valuable asset and are willing to work with those employers, perhaps in a non-monetary way. We would like to give you a raise. We can't, but what can we do to make your work environment more pleasant? The more that those kind of businesses can do that, I think that those businesses are going to have a leg up. And I think Jeff's point is extremely well taken, particularly when you have a labor shortage. If you're looking at a job that's paying $12 an hour and is not a very pleasant place to work, and there's another business across the street that's paying $12.25 an hour, and it's a really nice place to work at, guess what? You know, you're going to see employees flooding over to that other business. They may even take, they may even drop down from $12 an hour to $11.50 an hour and take a little bit less money simply because it's a better work environment. I think Jeff's is exactly right.
Jeff, thanks for that call. We'll go to Dale now in Madison. Dale, hello.
Yeah, you mentioned that a lot of these shortages are on like front end low wage workers. A lot of those jobs are part-time because the employers do not want to pay health care. Well, it used to be that those people would work two or three part-time jobs, not have health care, but count on the extra income. Now in COVID, those people are saying, no, 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 I'll do one part-time job instead of three and have Medicaid. So I think that has to be taken into account. You used to have one person doing three jobs. Those people aren't going to make that choice anymore, because they need the health care. This country has to deal with health care if they want workers.
Dale, thanks for the call. Steve, health care being a or lack of health care being a disincentive to work more.
Dale, again, just like Jeff, I think you're exactly right. I think that if, I mean, a lot of employers, you see this in the auto industry, is that you had a lot of labor unions basically say, look, we're willing to take lower pay if you maintain our health benefits. And if you are working for a company that says, hey, you know, we're paying you $12, $15, you know, even $15 an hour, and say, you know, you have a choice between an increase in pay and no health benefits, or keep that same pay and we're going to offer you basic health benefits, I would bet that the vast majority of the employees would take the health benefits, because healthcare is extremely expensive. And it's the major cause of personal bankruptcy in the U.S. So I think you're right. And that's where a lot of businesses have to start thinking outside the box. They have to start thinking, you know, what else can we do to make this position attractive to employees? And offering a better work environment and offering, even if it's basic health care, those types of things are really very well received.
Thanks a lot for that call. We're talking to Steve Deller, economist at UW-Madison, about worker shortages in the state. Back to your calls now. Mike is on the line in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering, I wanted to ask, you mentioned earlier that small businesses are kind of disincentivized from raising their wages, and it would kind of snuff them out and push them off to the side. I was wondering how you think, or like what we could do to kind of level the playing field between small businesses and large corporations like Amazon, where workers can't even unionize. I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Steve, what do you think?
I think the one thing that small businesses can do can go back to Jeff's earlier caller's comment about making this a really pleasant place to work. I've done some research with a colleague of mine, Tessa Conroy, that looked at the differences between women business owners and men business owners. And guess what? Women business owners tend to outperform men business owners. And part of it is this kind of non-monetary compensation. It's making it a better work environment. And I think that that's one thing that we could probably help work with small businesses, the owners and the management, in terms of how to be more effective in keeping their employees happy. Many of these small business owners are very, very good at what they do, but sometimes they struggle with the business end of it. And this type of kind of strategy could actually be quite helpful.
Thanks a lot for that call. Mike, I want to get in one more caller before we run out of time. Steve, Katie is with us in Spring Green. Katie, hi.
Hi. I'm just trying to comment on the low-wage restaurant work. I came from Chicago 6 years ago after spending 12 years cooking, where I worked for very little money, but I was always trying to get to a point where I'd either get to be a chef or a sous chef. I moved to Wisconsin and started a small food business. And out here in Spring Green, there was basically no labor pool. There's not even culinary classes or cooking classes at the high school. When I started, I was in high school, and I got to take a ton of cooking classes in my regular high school day. And, like, here there's not even that. So I don't know where you're hoping to get the low-paid workers who want to learn a skill, because there aren't going to be jobs that pay them well, even if they advance in their career.
Katie, thanks for that call. Steve, your thoughts on what Katie had to say just in our last minute.
I think that's right, but I think you need to look beyond Spring Green for your labor pool. I think you need to start looking like all the way up to Baraboo, all the way down to Richland Center, and start looking at a much bigger pool to tap into. Tap into the Madison College Culinary Arts Program. It's an excellent program. So a lot of times people think, well, I'll just put an ad in the local newspaper. That's not sufficient. You got to look out broader. Also create an environment where people want to work there. I may not make a lot of money, but I really love what I'm doing and I love who I work for. So there are strategies that you can put in place, but it's a struggle.
Katie, good luck to you. And Steve, thanks as always for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Steve Deller, regional economist at UW-Madison, with us today to talk about what a worker shortage looks like in Wisconsin and how it's affecting workers and employers.